In tech we trust. It's the people in charge we're not sure about.
Okay, so let's do this then. Episode 27 in Tech We Trust. Welcome, everybody. So this week, Gabriel Chapman, Mark Farley, Hans Delinier, and myself, Nigel Poulton. Hans, what's going on with you?
Oh, man. Between I don't care and rage with recruiters, one day I'm going to write a book that no one wants to read.
Oh, I've written one of them. Hey, Mark's written some of them as well. So you got anything interesting going on, Mark?
No, but I want to find out who's recruiting Hans, man. That's what I want to know.
No one. That's the whole freaking thing.
I think he wants to know, too.
Oh, what's going on? Lovely Northern California weather. It's just gorgeous here. I know you're buried in snow there in Boston, and we have, you know, like 75 degrees today. And it's March Madness time. I've got like 5 brackets going, and I'm looking forward to it. And I'm drinking a beer.
There you go. Gabriel, are you on a week-long of or a week's worth of training this week, did you say last week?
Yes, yeah, I'm on a week's worth of training up here in wonderful San Jose at the Cisco campus. Learning up on some UCS superpower technologies, and then next week I'm in Seattle, and then I just start a whirlwind of travel all over again. New York, Vancouver, and a couple other fun areas to go. So,
cool. All right, then. So, let's move on into tech news, and following on from the feedback we got from the survey a couple of weeks ago, we're going to change things up a little bit. We're just going to run through all of what we think are the highlights of the news from the last week since the last podcast, and then when we're done with those, we'll get into a bit more detail with it. I don't know, two or three items maybe. So first on the agenda, vSphere 6 went general availability. I think maybe it was like last Friday or something, about 6 weeks after the launch and just narrowly making it into quarter one there. I hope everybody that's listening actually is in an earthquake-proof building for this next one, because VCE announced groundbreaking advancements to its Frankenstein-like converged infrastructure solutions. Now, the Frankenstein-like are my take on it there, but they were talking about things like scale up and scale out via something called VCE scale architecture, which, don't want to get into it too much now because I think we'll probably come back to this one, but there was talk of like connecting multiple V blocks into, I guess, like a single clustered V block. So hopefully we'll come back to that one. Next up, though, there was another all flash array product, this time from the guys who I reckon probably couldn't market water in a desert country, Fujitsu. They unveiled, yeah, honestly, they unveiled the Eternus DX200F. Sounds boring. All flash
array.
It's
always good to end a product number with F.
Yeah, there you go. And apparently it's unbreakable. Okay. Interestingly, actually, EMC unveiled their, well, they didn't unveil their plans, but there's been a lot of talk around DSSD, and it looks like EMC have got Oracle squarely in their sights. Here's an interesting one, though. Microsoft looks set to put Internet Explorer out of its misery as it finally concedes it's just not on par with Chrome and Firefox. Again, my personal opinion. Here's an interesting one, I think at least. A potentially serious player here in the scale-out NAS space has emerged from stealth. So a company called, I think, Cumulo, made up from a bunch of guys from Isilon, they could be bringing us a serious, serious alternative to Isilon in that market. And I think there's plenty of oxygen up for grabs in that market at the moment. Speaking of companies coming out of stealth, there was StoReduce, deduplication designed for Amazon S3. And on the topic of cloud storage as well, Google announced, check this out for a name, Google Cloud Storage Nearline. I mean, really? So I'm going to do this. To me, all right, it looks like Amazon Glacier with supposedly better performance but a much crappier name. And that, yeah, that's the news from the week. So I think...
is that Google name again? I already forgot.
Yeah, Google Cloud Storage Nearline. I mean, things like Glacier or S3, that just they roll off the tongue.
I already forgot it again.
Yeah. Just as well, I've got it written here.
Nearline is the only thing you need to remember because they call Glacier offline. And the reason for that is that Glacier has an SLA of, I think, 3 hours. And there's no guarantee on that. It is, well, on average, you'll get your data within or as of 3 hours. And they want to have that same price level as Glacier, but with a lot lower latency. So,
hey, here's a question then. So to retrieve somebody's data in 3 hours, I mean, printed off on paper and they're reading it back in or something?
No, what the thing there is that you trigger a call and that's going to trigger a script that probably is going to get you your data somehow.
Yeah, but where is that data for it to take 3 hours to pull back?
Well, there's no one that knows. There's no one that knows in public what Glacier is built upon. In the beginning, people thought it would have been tape because of the cost perspective. Apparently, it would not be tape. That's the only thing that I know. But I don't know what it actually is.
Well, for three-hour recall time, if it's not tape, it's got to be like printer paper or something then.
I don't know.
Pigeons.
Pigeons, yeah.
Pigeons, yeah.
Even they're too quick for 3 hours. Yeah. Okay, I think, can we first hit on VCE products here? So I don't know if anybody in particular wants to take the lead on this, but I'm personally, right, I'm not a fan of VCE and their convergent infrastructure products, but they're market leading, right? I can't argue with that. And they're expanding their portfolio at a pretty rapid clip.
Well, what do you mean with expanding? They're just adding products from EMC into the portfolio, new products, other products. That's what's happening here. They're just making new V blocks now with Xtreme.io, with ACI, with NSX. It's just the products that weren't in there 2-3 years ago.
Aren't they also going to ship applications with some of the V blocks in the future as well?
Yeah, they're going to integrate kind of what IBM did with the PureFlex, Pure Systems. And there's also some aspects of the new VBlock architecture that allow for additions of pods of resources. So it's providing a little more flexibility. They're definitely addressing, I think, some of the initial issues that they had with larger scale or going towards, a much larger scale of customer than they are with the current VBlock offering, right? And being able to tune compute storage resources accordingly.
Hey, what kind of customers are those bigger customers there, Gabriel? Do you have a feel for that?
Yeah, no, I mean, it's there's a whole number of these service integrators. You look at companies like WePro or Cognizant, those are both very large service integrator partners that will go out and provision, masses amounts of resources out there. There's cloud providers that, if you look in the Gartner cloud quadrant that run on VBlock architectures.
Oh, really? Okay, so I'm moderately surprised at that. I really thought it was more aimed at the traditional enterprise customers. I'd always thought like the cloud providers and people like that would roll a lot of their own stuff and have a bunch of skills on site and stuff, but fair play. Okay. Does anybody know what this, what do they call it? VCE scale technology that apparently is going to allow them to scale up and scale out?
From what I saw, they didn't release a whole lot of details around the architecture itself. It was more kind of a, an introductory announcement. I think you'll probably start to see a lot more of that information trickle out over the course of the next, I would say, month or two as some of those items are released in more depth.
Yeah, it was even new products are going to roll out throughout the year. That was the end line. So you're probably not even going to know everything until Q4.
Sure. It just grinds on me a little bit when we get these product announcements and they say things like, because it's a pretty impressive claim to make, we'll scale up and we'll scale out. And then they mention something, VCE scale architecture is going to enable us to do that. But then there's no detail behind it. Then it's just marketing crap for the time being, right? Don't get me wrong. I'm sure there is product coming behind it. But right now, it just leaves me wanting and kind of ruffles my feathers a bit.
I'm not a real specialist in in V blocks, but or in VC in a general, but they're just combining in a tool set with a layer on top products from EMC, Cisco, and VMware, probably some other partners in the future. If it's going to be scale up and scale out, it's going to be EMC products underneath that.
But we're lacking detail there, right?
Yeah.
Hey, I tell you what I did think was interesting. It seems to be that any product that is labeled a V-block has to have Cisco networking equipment in it. And that apparently is the reason why some of the new offerings are going to be called VX-block. And that will allow them to, let's say, for instance, deploy NSX or another third-party networking product going forward. Now, I had no idea, I'm assuming that is the case, but I had no idea that, you know, under the terms of the previous agreement, anything called a V-block had to have the Cisco stuff in there. So, yeah, if you want non-Cisco stuff, it looks like you need to buy the kit that's got X in the middle of the name.
I mean, I just don't know.
No worries. Crappy, boring stuff, I think, personally, anyway.
Can't they call it Nearline or Glacier or something like that?
Yeah, there you go. That's why you're in marketing, Mark.
That's why I have the mute button on my microphone so I can turn it off every now and then.
Yeah. Should we move on to something that I think is a bit more interesting? The DSSD plans that people have been talking about with regards to EMC. So they picked up DSSD, I think, in the summer of last year. And at least I didn't know a great deal about it and probably still don't. But it seems very much like they're aiming it as high performance, and I mean very high performance here, not so much high capacity, but native API access to storage using NVMe over PCIe. Kind of a mouthful there, but is a, if you can kind of digest that, native API access to storage, I'm guessing, right, if it's NVMe over PCIe, then the storage that DSSD provides, would that be like an extension to memory within a server? And if that is the case and it's native API, that's like a massive paradigm shift from a storage perspective, right? Now, Go on.
Well, what it allows you to do is it allows you to ignore things like common SCSI addressing, right? And then you're looking at massive parallelism, which is a word I have a hard time saying. But it's, you know, you're not having to deal with RAID. You're looking at, you know, say shelves of NAND or shelves of these NVMe based objects as disks. You can address any number of them. You can spread that out via any algorithm you want in terms of where you place the data on there. And if you design it properly, it makes for this like very, very fast, very low, ultra low latency. You're talking about hundreds of thousands, you know, millions of IOPS in, you know, sub 200 microsecond latencies, right? And it's the kind of thing that, you know, we don't normally see a use case for so much in the traditional standard enterprise, but there are a subset of customers out there that would really look at something like this and say, yes, I want that.
Yeah. So what I think is a really interesting part here, if you look at what EMC does with acquisitions, it looks like they really nailed one here, coming to markets within the year after acquisition. Definitely going to be a good one. And there's, and in all honesty, I don't see anything out there today that does what this product will do. In that level of low latency parallelism, it's definitely going to find its market.
But is that in itself not potentially a warning flag saying, hey, there's nothing already out there, you're going to try and create a market here? Is there a market actually for it?
There's definitely a market for it in the financial industry. But also, I will say that there are probably, I would say that any company that's building something that's an NVMe-based platform right now, if it's not in beta right now internally or alpha internally, it's what they're going to be hedging the next bet on. And so I would expect to see a host of different products that are released over the course of the next 24 months that are NVMe based.
EMC is the 800-pound gorilla in the storage market at the moment, right? And if they get in there first with a product like DSSD, is there any Is there any uprooting them in the future?
Yeah, I mean, you know, just because somebody's first to market doesn't mean they get to capture the market.
No, I get that.
First mover advantage definitely is a benefit to them. But, you know, there's always somebody who can build a better mousetrap. It just depends on how they're able to market it and, you know, how mature that system ends up being. I mean, keep in mind, I mean, EMC's on a big change right now as they start to morph into something a little bit different than a storage company and more of a company that focused on hybrid cloud solutions and whatnot. And I wouldn't be surprised to see them get into some aspect of the compute game, you know, in the near future. But if you look at what's happening, you have a huge swath of this VMAX business that's been kind of like the cash cow for a long time that's slowly starting to erode away as disruptive technologies come into place to supplant it. And so Xtreme.io comes out as the, you know, the replacement or the competitive take against SolidFire, you know, Pure Storage and others. So that stems some of the tide of those losses for customers who are looking to buy performance. And then you possibly look at something like DSSD to become the ultra tier zero workload manager and Xtreme.io to become tiers one and two as flash prices come down significantly to the point where they're close to disk. And now you have supplanted a technology that was kind of your tier one, tier zero, and tier two.
I know, but DSSD, the way I understand it at the moment, it's going to be a bit of a niche fit, isn't it? If it talks native APIs, and then it's got this weird and wonderful interconnect technology, and it's potentially, I'm assuming here, an extension of memory rather than a SCSI device like we've talked about. That's not automatically going to replace any VMAXs or Xtreme.io, is it?
No, it's not a replacement of Xtreme.io and VMAX. If you think about the in-memory databases today, what is their biggest challenge? Size. If you can only size the in-memory databases to the size of what you can put in memory. If you can extend that to bigger boxes on the same or almost the same speed, you don't need. And there's a good graph in where they place all the products from EMC, and the VMAX goes to that high performance, but where you need more data services. The DSSD goes to the extreme high performance, but there's hardly any data services necessary. And I mean with that, all the advanced enterprise features that we ask from a VMAX, they're not necessary for a DSSD. DSSD is just a big bunch of as fast as possible memory.
For next-gen applications.
Yes.
But then again, also, you know, the architecture, if it plays out the way I understand it, you don't need those data services.
Yeah.
In some respects. So that's the idea. It's a paradigm shift in terms of storage use, storage access. So, I mean, it remains to be seen as that market starts to mature. I mean, I guarantee you, you know, you look at some of the purchases, you know, SanDisk, those guys watch what they're buying. You know, they picked up Skyera, and Skyera wasn't necessarily a player in the all-flash space, but what they did have is some very interesting intellectual property around high-density flash-based devices, and those could easily become NVMe-based solutions as well. You know, they were looking at something like 512 terabytes in a 1U box. So, you know, and then you go look at Open Compute Project. There was a company, the first Chinese adopter into OCP, was a company called Net.Brick, that nobody had ever heard of. They had just had a single flash page for their corporate website, but they were offering or touting up a design for an NVMe-based array that was 2U that did 11 million IOPS and 48 terabytes of provisioned storage. So there's some really interesting stuff being carved out in that space as people rush into kind of the next thing for, you know, high-speed storage connectivity or extension of memory from the compute.
So I think it's an interesting product, right? And an interesting market that it's trying to get into. Should we shift gears a little bit then onto Cumulo? I think these guys look really interesting. So scale-out NAS platform called Cumulo Core, like I mentioned earlier, built by a bunch of former Isilon guys. So I think we're assuming that they get scale-out NAS, if you will. Maybe this could be positioned as Isilon 2.0. You know, hey, we built Isilon, it got bought, we went away, learned a bunch from Isilon, and we've built a potentially better product. And like I said before, I think there's plenty of room for more players in that market. I mean, really, there's only Isilon at the moment.
There's Isilon, a few software-based solutions that are competitive to an extent, but not
to
the
an
same
extent.
Level.
Yeah,
right. Yeah, I mean, if you look at Scality, you can kind of say Ceph plays in that space. There's a couple others. Zadara is another one. You know, they're smaller companies, but they are winning these big, you know, multi-petabyte installs. You know, you look at some of those, like Scality, I know does really large, is really well suited to large mail constructs for cable companies, right? So every time you get a cable account for, you know, with Cox or somebody like that, you know, you get your 50 gigabyte mailbox. We'll multiply that times 5 or 6 million subscribers, and you're looking for, you know, you're not running that on Exchange.
No.
And you don't necessarily want to put it on Isilon. What you would want to do is put it on something that was really super cheap commodity storage base at around $200 to $300 a terabyte, where you're paying for the storage services to leverage on top of it. And that's the marketplace that particular type of technology is software defined or software based technology fits. With something like Accumulo, you're adding on top of it data analytics. So yep. It's scale out flash, scale out hybrid. And it really is almost everybody associated with the core building of Isilon. So the people know, you know, they built 1FS and all that technology. They understand scale out, scale up. And this is kind of taking, you know, this kind of like, you know, Isilon 2.0. And it was interesting that the chart that they put out, they didn't really put EMC's name anywhere on that chart. They just put a couple EMC product names right on that chart that they were competing against.
My take on this one is that it's not necessarily the scale out and the NAS part that is important. They're just using their information they got, their knowledge they got out of that venture, but it's the data analytics, data aware storage. And I mean, Mark can't comment on this, but this is exactly in that market where you see a couple of companies like Quadra, where Mark works, where like Data Gravity, maybe all coming with a different way of building it. So I don't think that Data Gravity today has a scale out product like Cumulo tends to be, but they're all playing more into the data analytics as such, the information in the data, what can we do with what is in our NAS other than just serving the storage as such. So I think Isilon today stops at the serving the storage at a really good scale-out way. What they're doing here is going beyond that. What do we do with the files? And seeing that we already have three companies coming out of stealth within 12 months, I think this is going to be something to look forward to what's happening in that space in the next 24 months.
And, you know, I think the fact that these analytics are baked into the core of the product. So the way I understand it, always on, you know, always moving that data around, always having that understanding and visibility of how your data is and how it's behaving and operating based on that, rather than it being like a bolt-on product afterwards that maybe you have to, I'm assuming you're not going to have to pay a license fee for it if it's in the core product. If you don't have to and it's always on, I think that's a real winner there.
Well, you know, what I find interesting is, does that aspect scale, right? If I'm looking at a multi-petabyte file system, what information am I trying to glean from that? Because the screenshots I've seen of what they have, one of them says IOPS hotspots, and it bakes it down from, you know, kind of this kind of flow chart down into specific files. And I'm like, is that necessarily good information for me to ultimately know? And then how much of that information can I digest? And what are my actions based on understanding that? If I have 20 million files in a file system, and, you know, I mean, at some point, it's going to be so much information, you're going to get overload, and you're going to have to, you know, they're going to have to kind of bake in some kind of actionable intelligence in there to kind of help you address what that actually means, or what, you know, what does this file issue actually mean to your application design or whatnot. And then there's the secondary aspect around, analytics into information analytics and understanding what data is and things like credit card numbers and you know, HIPAA information and those types of things. I haven't seen that come back so far yet from what they're putting out. So until I know a little bit more, it's hard to really understand how they're going to position this and in terms of what value the customer actually gets from it. Because you could get a very much an information overload. You know, it's great if you have 100 files that you're having to deal with, but when you have hundreds of thousands, it's a little bit different.
Yeah. So for me, the interesting part is not necessarily the IOPS or the storage part of the analytics, but the information analytics, the second part where you go to. That's two different things. It's not what do I want to know what these files are doing as the concept of a file, but what is in those files? What is who is using those files? Who is using that type of file or this content in that file? That's where the interesting part comes. What happens here is that they just ask customers, and that's what all these companies do. I mean, so forget a little bit about Qumulo here. So the whole concept of that data awareness is they ask the customers, well, you've got storage. What more do you want to do with this with the data that we are keeping for you while the CPUs have idle time, for example? This is what's happening here. They're looking into the data as such, into the information, and trying to find the questions you want to ask it.
So are we saying here that the Qumulo product, just dragging it back there real quick, does information analytics, or are we saying we hope it does and we would like it to?
I think it does have an integrated analytics aspect that they're going to trademark. It looks like it's something called Data Aware, possibly. I don't know. It's hard to tell. I've seen a couple screenshots, and I don't know if Data Aware is a company, a pseudo company that they're working on. But there are dashboards around analytics. And that there were also dashboards that I saw around, they have one called IOPS Hotspot. I'm guessing that's going to be a tier one, one tier of their data analytics. Another aspects were going to be analytics around, what specific files were based on their sizes and whatnot. What I haven't seen yet is if there's actually awareness of the data within the files. I would think that that's the next area to go into. Until we actually see, until I talk to somebody and I do go through a demo and I look at all the literature or whatnot, it's hard to really identify.
I'm assuming if we haven't seen screenshots of stuff like that, it's probably not in there right now. Because, I mean, it's all well and good to do IOPS hotspots and, when was the last time a file I was touching stuff. That's okay, but without the context of what's in the file, I'm not saying it's not good. It's just not as good as it would be if it did do all of that, right?
Yeah.
Well, you can't do everything on day one.
No, you can't. But that's a really good point, actually, Gabriel. I'll tell you what I really did like about this, right? So they announced, and there's already a product, right? It's not like that they've pre-announced.
Right.
They've come out of stealth. I think they've been in stealth for about 3 years. They've sucked in $67 million while in stealth, $40 million in the last B round of funding. And as they come out of stealth, they've got a product there pretty much ready for us. And I just love that.
I saw the exact same thing last year from Data Gravity. Exact same story. It's the same type of market. They came out of stealth with a product in their hands, the same type of funding and up front. So, yeah, I see two parallel companies here.
What you're seeing is and that's happening. The same thing happened at Simplivity. We had a product before we had our B round, and we had 50 beta customers. And you're seeing these companies they're taking minimally viable product and getting it to beta customers and having them buy it and hammer it in the beginning, and then they're tweaking and going to market instead of coming out with that thing or that product announcement. And then that really kind of helps empower a much larger B round, and that accelerates your time to market. Because, it's tough to, it's hard to get just, Mark will probably attest this more. It's hard to get that A round of funding. The A round of funding is what gets you that product baked into a fashion that you actually can productize and have a go to market with. And if you have enough early beta customers that when you launch and that B round comes in line at the same time, now you're ready to go out there and expand and grow the business at a much more rapid pace to find an exit. Instead of in the past, you would usually get A's and B rounds, and it was just different. You know, most companies, you could announce a product and you weren't quite ready to sell it for a little bit more long time.
Hey now!
I'm babbling.
Can you comment on that, Mark? Were you listening even?
Oh, yes, I was listening. I was listening with great interest, and I'm back to that old position of I can't comment.
Yeah, finally, we got him there.
The ledge that I always wind up on. No, I can't comment, even though I did comment on this not long ago in another podcast.
Yeah. What can you comment on the general idea that I brought with the three companies and the market? Is there something you want to say about that?
Well, I think it makes sense that intelligence about data, I think, is going to be one of the big areas of adding value in the storage stack next, right? Everybody has so much data, and whether it's for audit purposes or compliance purposes or analytics purposes of other types, knowing what's in this data, I think, is going to be a big deal.
I give a big hey now to that. Totally agree. Should we shift it on to our next story then? Hans, I think you at least certainly wanted to talk about StoReduce, dedupe in the Amazon Web Services cloud with regards to S3. Is that right?
Yep, that was another out of stealth of last week. In short, it actually, and you can say it in two lines, is that they can put a service deduplication engine either on premises or in Amazon as such as the first, as your first entry point, and they're doing deduplication in flight of your data that you're putting into Amazon, which is actually quite interesting because what are you using Amazon for? Mostly for data that you don't want to, you don't need immediately well, we talked about this like 15 minutes ago with the Google Nearline. You put stuff in the cloud that you don't need that lowest latency in micro and milliseconds. Even if you could allow yourself another couple of seconds, you could allow yourself to do deduplication. And what is the expensive part of putting a lot of stuff in the cloud? Well, it is, if it's completely unhydrated, if it's dehydrated, right, it takes a lot of place. So if you can deduplicate it before it hits the cloud, you're not taking in that much space. I think it's a good thing.
Okay, fair play.
The only thing that I have here, again, is that you are relying, even if you touch the data into Amazon as such, without that engine, you can't do anything with it because it's deduplicated. That's the only thing. It's kind of weird for me, and it's the only thing that I'm afraid of every single time that I hear deduplication is when and how do I get it rehydrated, right? And if that service is my first point of entry into my data as such, the raw data, the files that I need, and that service of deduplication fails, I can't touch anything of my search. I'm not sure if I'm paranoid or not, but
here's a question then. So I get it. I think what you're saying is you want some kind of high availability around that service or some assurance that, you know, your map of how you pull back, how you undedupe that data, rehydrate it, whatever. You want some assurance that that service is always going to be there, right?
Yeah.
Has anybody heard, and I know this is a startup and you're potentially spinning up a VM in Amazon that does it all for you, but has anybody heard any horror stories of anybody losing access to deduplicated data because you've lost the map in memory or on disk or whatever that tells you where everything is? Anybody heard of that ever happening?
Never heard of it.
No, nope.
I've never heard of it either.
Yeah, like, never heard of it.
It's kind of like a VLAN hop attack. You could probably simulate one in the lab, but you know, if theoretically it's possible, but the odds of it happening are relatively ultra low.
Yeah, like, I mean, I totally get where you're coming from, Hans, and we've maybe put the kiss of death on it by saying we've never heard of it there. It'll be in the news next week. But I've never heard of that happening. So, fair comment.
I mean, it goes back to, I remember doing backups with Symantec products to tape, and the tapes could only be read by the same Symantec product, right? Yeah. See, that's where I go from. I had the tapes in my hands, and I couldn't read them with anything else than reinstalling that. That's where I'm going for. Yeah. And I'm always afraid of... I cannot access my raw data as such. I cannot access... Somehow, I want to have a way of getting to my raw data.
Yeah, I get that. And I suppose, you know, in 20, 30, 40 years' time, if you want to get access to that data on S3 and you don't have that instance running, that store-reduced VM in the future, then, you know, you might think, oh, yeah, we've got that data on the cloud. No problems. We pull it back. Then maybe you've got an issue there. Fair enough. And that's slightly... Go on.
I think that's a policy issue, not so much a technology issue.
Do you reckon? You know, I don't know.
Because I think most organizations, A, don't have 30-year retention policies. B, have a trouble even doing one-year retention policies with the proper amount of data. I'd much rather look at it's something around the lines that as an intelligent data retention policy analytics. And if I have to keep an old... you know, piece of software on the shelf someplace to access it at some point in the future, then so be it. How many of us have worked at locator companies where you kept an old tape drive system sitting in a shelf someplace in case you had to go pull a tape back from Iron Mountain from 7 years ago?
Yes,
can't do it with this. That's the whole thing. This is a service that lives in the cloud by some startup. You can't do this. So I cannot trust...
I don't know. Maybe you can back up that EC2 instance that's running the store-reduced virtual machine. I'm guessing here, right?
Yeah, and then so making the data twice, and why did I deduplicate it?
No, I just mean backing up the instance that's got the map on how to rehydrate it all.
I think they're smart enough to know that there's going to have to be some way to get the catalog. Right? I mean, even TSM, you know, we would do a TSM backup, and in case, you know, there was a TSM... catalog tape that went out with it, but you also email the catalog. We also email the catalog to Google, to Gmail account, to keep a copy of it up there in case we knew Gmail was going to be around a lot longer than the tape would. So, you know, there's ways to design around that. I mean, it's worth having a discussion with the customer or with the company. Hey,
you call that designing around it, do you?
Yeah, I do. Gmail.
There you go.
And trust me, we were not the first company to do that.
No, I'll bet. Hey, before we shift on to biz news, guys, does anybody want to talk about any of the other things? Microsoft killing Internet Explorer, the Fujitsu thing? Nope.
Microsoft is killing Internet Explorer. What kind of what browser are they going to put on their tablets?
Project Spartan is what it's called now.
Is that like Projectile Spartan? What the hell is that?
Makes about as much sense as bundling Media Player with Windows Server.
What?
What was that music player they had that everybody loved so much?
Zoom player. Oh, Zoom.
I actually think this kind of makes good sense. I mean, I'm not like an expert, right? But Internet Explorer, it's like it's loathed by just about anybody that's not a Microsoft developer, right? I mean, it's behind Chrome and Firefox.
I think it's even loathed by Microsoft developers.
Yeah, exactly.
Almost as much as Bing.
Well, yeah. And Microsoft, they're trying to embrace open source these days, aren't they? And there's kind of a lot of bad blood and a lot of bad history with Internet Explorer and trying to dictate internet and web standards and things like that. And thank goodness the likes of Firefox and Chrome came along to sort things out, because we have a much better internet these days because of those two browsers. I mean, I reckon the internet would be not like a massively different place, but it wouldn't be as good as it is now if we just had Internet Explorer.
I'm bringing back Netscape.
Yeah, I was just going to say the same thing.
Which I paid for 1.0 at CompUSA in 1994 or 5 or whatever it was.
CompUSA?
It was a computer superstore in the U.S. for a long time until it went comp under.
Bankrupt. Okay.
I don't know. I think what happened is Fry's beat them out or something, right?
But yeah, CompUSA went out. Just destroyed them.
Yeah, or Best Buy or something, another company that's struggling right now. Yeah, you just can't sell motherboards, you know, en masse around the country.
I mean, you know, I remember, you know, being, gosh, what was it? 94, 95 or so, and I had like a DX, you know, a 386 SX, and going to the CompUSA store and browsing at the memory selection, you know, and going, wow, when can I get
four megs of memory?
I know, kind of drooling.
Two megs of memory.
And thinking how that was going to
make color video card.
Thinking how that was going to make, you know, DOS 6 work better.
Yeah,
QMEM memory manager software and everything else that you did to squeeze out the 200 megs of hard drive space you had.
200 megs of it. You know what? I'm sure I've said this before. My first PC, 386 SX33, half a meg of RAM, and it had a 40 megabyte hard drive in it. Right. The guy that sold it to us, it was his business, like a small local business that built PCs. I was like, I don't know, like 14 or 15 years old. He put his hand on my shoulder and said to me with my dad there, "Sir, he will never fill this 40 megabyte hard drive in his entire life." I mean, stick that in your pipe and smoke it, right? Good grief.
But those were the days. How often did you get to like 39.999 and have to move a file around and reconfigure things? I mean, I used to get, I mean, back then you would tune your hard drive.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, that's right.
Concerned about every block that went on that thing. Today, it's like I download so much stuff that I don't even know if I even have it on the computer anymore.
Yeah.
But, you know, there used to be a time when you really had to fine tune, be mindful of what you put on your computer. And, you know, that's the days before. You know, that because of the size of hard drives and things like that that we have today, we had this massive data explosion that we're always talking about in the storage space. And I would say that 90% of it's crap.
Oh, and that's the
why
rest,
I want
yeah.
to see, and that's why I want to see intelligent data management much more so than I want to see bigger, better drives or disks or file systems.
I'd like to see the idea of, you know, the inability to consume a hard drive in the rest of your life. Maybe we should start putting them in our food, breaking them apart and like eating them. You know, who can eat a hard drive fastest? Maybe SSDs are easier on the digestion.
You need a balanced diet, right? Hey, Chips. Do you think the storage companies really want information and data analytics? Because it's a stupid question, okay, but do they run the risk of, you know, us performing analytics across all of our data set and saying, holy cow, 90-odd% of it we don't need, let's trash it all. Hey, we've got enough storage for the next 10 years now. Or is that just stupid?
Let me put on my tinfoil hat here. Conspiracy.
Is that a big tinfoil hat or a small one?
My head's not that big.
And is it for the big head or the small head?
Which one's your small one? That's the thing, Mark.
Oh, a mute's coming on.
Shall we switch it on to business news? Do we have to? Here we go. In other news, right, this is a this one's going to generate some debate, right, even though it's tiny and pathetic, but Nutanix is clearly playing with the big boys now because it's announced a self-acclaimed prestigious Nutanix platform expert certification, which apparently is putting up there on par with the CCIE and the VCDX certifications.
You know what? Galileo called and said that the sun is not orbiting around the planet Nutanix. In fact, the planet Nutanix is just orbiting around itself.
Rim shot there.
You're going old school.
So I don't have a problem with it, right? Go on, Mark.
No, I just love Hans's comment. I love the fact that it was, you know, it was probably rehearsed, but it came off pretty fresh. You know, I'd give him four or five stars.
It was good. You see, the thing is, right, in my last real job, okay, you know, of course I've got several real jobs now, but my last, like, 9 to 5 where I was an employee, so I looked after storage and Unix, and my storage and Unix guys didn't have any certifications. They didn't care for them, right? But the Windows team sat behind us, and behind them were the VMware guys, and behind them were the Cisco guys. All of those guys lived and breathed certifications, right? They all had to have them, all had to have the latest ones. And what it did was it bred a mentality among those teams for only wanting to work with those technologies. So everywhere they go in the marketplace, you know, as employees for different companies, they go with their Microsoft certs or their VMware certs or their Cisco certs, right? And anytime they're looking to purchase a new technology, well, I've got certifications in this. I want to get more. I want to work with this technology. Hey, we should buy more Cisco, or hey, we should buy more VMware or more Microsoft. You know, in a roundabout way, those companies won hearts and minds and market share in a little way. I know these are like techie people, right, and not necessarily massively influential in what technologies were bought. But if Nutanix, by getting some guys and ladies all certified up to be Nutanix Uber experts or whatever, and they move around in the marketplace and the job market, and suddenly start saying, hey, well, I've got Nutanix certs and I know how to use Nutanix solutions, let's go and deploy some and buy some. Is there any merit in that?
So let me combine this with other companies that have that level of certification, which is barely Cisco, Citrix, and VMware. How many customers does VMware have?
Oh, yeah, okay. I get it, yeah. But hey, they've got to aim high, right? You can't knock them for saying we want to be the next VMware.
When did VMware start with the VCDX certification? How many VCDXs are there today of how many customers?
Hans, you brought out, who was it that you were citing earlier? Was it I'll go back further. I'll go to Aristotle and say the worst form of inequality is to try to make unequal things equal.
Yeah.
So I can't compete with that. We're moving on then. Other business news. EMC are going to do a big data event on 23rd of March. I think that's Monday next week. I don't know anything about this.
Oh, there's nothing on it. Just wanted to put it in the notes. There's going to be a link in the show notes if you want to follow it.
Okay, do we expect that EMC are going to announce anything at that or not?
I reckon. I think there's going to be potentially some announcements around a big data play.
All right. And last on the agenda, again, last this week, and you had this last week, Hans, Docker acquires Kitematic, so enabling Docker on the Mac. I guess a bunch of developers have Macs out there. I know that's true. I think that's kind of boring, personally. It doesn't do anything for me, but apparently Kitematic has a really good GUI interface to managing Docker containers and things, so wouldn't be surprised if the GUI side of things finds its way into more of the mainline product. But aside from that, I don't think there's a great deal to say on that. And there we go, gents. Anything for anything else?
I will probably not be on the show next week because I'm speaking. What? I'm speaking at Storage Expo in Belgium. And usually, by the time that we record at midnight, I will not be able to do a podcast.
Nigel, let me get this right. Nigel just stops talking, saying something about Docker, and Hans's next response is, and I won't be on the show next week.
All right, guys, Bye-bye. Thanks for being on the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Don't forget you can keep in touch with us via intech_wetrust on Twitter, and we're also around on Facebook and LinkedIn and all that kind of stuff. So until next week, thank you.